Hey everybody, on this episode of 10,000 Feet, the OST podcast, we have two of our connected products experts joining us. We have Jim Vandermay, who's actually our co-founder and chief innovation officer here, and Alex Jantz, who's a solution architect who's been on our team for over 7 years. So it was a pleasure to get to chat with them about data and things. I don't want to tease it too much, but toothpaste and match.com did come up, so we hope you enjoy the episode. Today, we are talking about a nice, just loosely broad topic of data, but we have the data experts in the room, so I am looking forward to where this conversation may or may not go. Do either of you guys have anything on your mind right now that you're sort of like, I definitely want to talk about this?
Well, we were going to talk about things and data, weren't we?
Right. Things and data.
Yeah.
So when we say things, do we mean smart things?
Well, it could be a smart thing.
Or
it could be a dumb thing.
Or a connected thing.
Or it could be a connected thing. And there's a difference between those.
What is that difference?
Alex?
So kind of prepping for this, I was thinking this morning, brushing my teeth, and I saw on my toothpaste thing, it was like whitening and plaque fighting, right? And looking at that, I was like, why is there so many different kinds of toothpaste? That ended up kind of being where my head went with this whole like data and things and what is connected or not connected. So do you know why there's so many different kinds of toothpaste?
I would expect it's through market differentiation and product differentiation.
It's all the same recipe at the end of it. Now there's some whitening addition, but really it's all about customer segmentation. So they want to find out if you're interested in gingivitis or plaque or whitening. They're trying to pick that up through product sales.
So in other words, if you have four different kinds of toothpaste from the same manufacturer, it's essentially the same thing.
Yep.
But they're going to be able to identify what you're interested in based upon what toothpaste you buy.
Exactly.
So they're going to generate data. This is how Procter & Gamble gets data about their consumers.
Right. So they have to create 10,000 different kinds of toothpaste for them to figure out who you are and what you like to buy and differentiate you as a customer. Kind of get market trends that way, right?
And one of the interesting things with smart connected things is that you're actually getting data directly from the use of the thing and not just what you're implied by the purchase of the thing.
So what if you didn't have to manufacture 10,000 different kinds of toothpaste?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are there any smart connected toothpastes right now?
Not toothpaste, but there is. I use a smart connected toothbrush.
Oh, yeah?
And it, based upon what I'm trying to achieve in my dental health, it prescribes different behaviors in toothbrushing. And then it monitors my behavior to see if I'm doing them, and then it gives me nudges for...
Like keep brushing, or like what's an example of a nudge?
So making sure that I brush in each zone correctly with the right amount of pressure for the right amount of time.
Jeez.
And then it reminds me about did I floss, did I rinse? And then it gives me a timeline, a trending analysis to see how I'm performing against my goals.
Oh my gosh, that is intense. Do you like it?
Well,
do you use it?
I do use it.
Okay, all right.
So your feedback loop is your toothbrush instead of your hygienist asking if you flossed and
right.
Feeling guilty every 6 months.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I swear I do. Then why are your gums bleeding?
Right, and so you create a different feedback. And that's a part of the data that's generated by the thing, mm-hmm. is it creates opportunities for feedback that's different than what we had before. Through a stickers on your refrigerator kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you as an individual, you get the feedback you're looking for,
mm-hmm.
sort of like proactive behavior sort of things.
Right.
And then back to the market segment, was there an onboarding survey or is there sort of like a follow-up activity that they're sort of asking
yes.
this information
and
for?
So I actually tried multiple brands of the Smart Connected Toothbrush, and I found that one brand actually tried to monetize the space of the mobile app. And so they were pushing ads to me while I was brushing my teeth.
Oh.
And I didn't care for that experience.
Yeah.
They were collecting data about me, and they were trying to to monetize that. While the other application that I'm using now just provides useful advice and feedback while I'm using the toothbrush.
So one feels like it's too in your face, where it's they're pushing too much toward you, and the other one feels like it's a little bit more symbiotic.
Yeah, and I think that symbiotic is a good one, where they are giving me value. It's not just about what they're trying to accomplish as a manufacturer of a connected toothbrush.
Right. Yeah, it's one of those like connected toothbrush. It could be one of those like eye roll, shrug sort of things, right? But like once you start digging into it, from a company or a product standpoint, there's a lot of data behind the scenes that is useful for that company or for them to be able to sell back to like a P&G mm-hmm. in effort to figure out who's buying what are they interested in? Are they dealing with cavities or are they more interested in whitening?
Well, right. And if it actually adds benefit to the user, right? I think that's where it all goes back, where if Jim actually has better dental hygiene because of it, then it makes it worthwhile, yeah. Right? Whereas I'm sure we've all seen there are just a plethora of badly used connected devices out there. You shared a website a while ago that I won't list the name because it's got a swear word in it, but just like people connecting products just to connect the product, right? Just as a market differentiator without the thought behind why are we doing this? How do we make this a positive experience for a user? What are some of those? I remember you. I think you were the one that shared that.
Yeah,
link.
So it's the Twitter account Internet of Shit.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Alex gets to say it, not me.
Since I'm a guest, yeah. Do I get a pass?
Right, you do get a pass. Okay. Yeah, you're yeah. in.
Yeah, so theirs is all about like, you know, taking IoT to the extreme, right?
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot of products out there that really provide no real benefit to a user other than having a product which is connected, and it's kind of the hot trend or has mm-hmm. been for a while now.
Mm-hmm. Novelty.
And the unintended consequence of that is sort of what they try to explore, right? So they've got security exploits, they've got data breaches, mm. they've got all this sort of thing that they're constantly following. Early on, it was more around like, why would you need a connected mirror? And that was actually something Amazon right. put out there, right? They would give you fashion advice. You know,
oh,
pose
really?
In front of the mirror. It'd take a picture of you. And then they'd use ML and AI to like give you fashion suggestions.
Oh my gosh!
ML, machine learning, AI, artificial intelligence.
Yes, thank you.
Good catch, Jim.
And so at the end of it, like that's one of those like, do you really want IoT in your bedroom? Do you want right. it to look like a mirror and like
yeah.
constantly record you? That's one of those things. Like it's good to have those cautionary, not like Orwellian necessarily, but like. People, Twitter accounts maybe, sort of like regulating or self-checking the situation.
Mm-hmm. So I think that when so we know, we can feel, we have intuition when we've gone too far. And you're explaining some of that, and then it gets put on someone's Twitter feed. The other part, though, is when and how do we design products to make good use of data? I mean, do you have some positive examples, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, one comes from you, Jim. So you're all about the, what do we call it? The measured self?
The quantified self.
Quantified self. And so you've got this posture thing that you wear on your back, right?
Yes, upright.
Upright.
Oh, is that like the little thing on your spine?
Yes, you put it between your shoulder blades.
Yeah, I've seen ads for that.
So that's like an individual seeking this sort of like information, right? And you've already determined that you want to have better posture. And that's mm-hmm. something that you're grappling with. Maybe it's a health thing.
And side comment, whenever you mention that product, immediately everybody
I
in
know.
The room
I
straightens
just was
up and gets
that
good
same
posture.
Thing. I'm like, oh boy.
So that's a device you have to wear. I think other companies are thinking about how to promote wellness in different ways, right? So it's all the way back to companies that produce furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Can they give you proactive feedback on how you're sitting because it's already built into the product? So we deal with furniture companies that are sort of using their ability to connect products, and they've already got the furniture market. So they say, why don't we just build the sensors right into the chair itself
yeah.
rather than be something that you have to wear around?
And I think that was one of the most interesting projects that we've worked on, Herman Miller taking the iconic Aeron chair that's been around for decades and then changing the fabric in the seat. Is that called the platen?
Yeah.
Okay. The fabric in the seat to make that into a sensing platform. As a consumer, I think about that and say, just a second, if they're able to sense, they're probably able to tell how much I weigh. If they're able to identify good posture, bad posture, sitting versus standing. So what data are they collecting about me and how is that being used?
Right. Yeah, so I think that is going to be one of the constant lines that companies are going to have to walk, right? Is what's too much or what's the right amount of data? And so there's the whole, can we make it anonymous? If it is anonymous, is it worthwhile to collect, or is it so important that it's something that we just want to leave behind? So, for example, Herman Miller kind of talked about the weight thing, and they determined, like, although we could collect it, it's not something that we would ever really want to have something happen with that data, so they decide not to actually save it.
Right. So I think that that's a really interesting point, because what has value to me as an individual using the chair means that I can't have it anonymized.
Right.
You have to know that I am sitting at this sit-stand desk and that I'm the one who's in present, and for me to get the value out of that application. But the facility manager, I have to specifically anonymize the data to create a different value proposition. And Herman Miller has yet a third value proposition based upon knowing how all of their tables and or all their desks and chairs are being used across all of their customers. So you actually have three different ways of consuming the data depending on who you are in relation to the product.
So there's something that you as an individual are getting out of it still, right? Posture, feedback, healthy office situation.
What a healthy office situation, like what would that be?
A gentle, like a nudge in the case that you've been sitting too long, maybe some proactive feedback to say it's time to get up and stretch and walk around. Better setup of the chair. So if you've ever looked at like a more complex high-end office chair, they've got
It's like eight knobs and
levers, right? So even getting the setup right is important. What is lumbar and why is it important to me? I think that's one of those helping the customer think through getting them situated in a way that's healthy is sort of that holistic view that they're looking at too.
So by taking a complex product interaction and using data and making it smart, you actually can reduce the simplicity of a otherwise fundamentally complex product.
Yeah, I think you're getting into a lot of that right there. That's a good point.
Okay. So simplification of the product is one way to leverage data. And then other ways is then to create a different... How does the relationship with the product change then because I have data, do you think?
As an individual?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you... it depends, right? So if you've got the toothbrush kind of chirping back at you saying you're not brushing enough, that could be a negative interaction. Or if you try to spin it around and be like, you know, gamify it, you try to make it more positive. And depending on the user type, two people could interpret the same interaction very differently, right? So I think getting that line balanced is kind of difficult for companies as well. You know, how do we make this informational but not overbearing? How do we give feedback in the case, oh, you've been sitting too long, but not critique you?
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we've been thinking through, trying to help think through, is how do we degrade the amount of interactions that we're pushing toward the user in the case that we're not getting positive feedback back from them? If they end up getting, like, if we push them information and they ignore it, we track that. We say, okay, we're not gonna update you again for a little while. We're gonna wait. And then when it's really important, we're going to try to update you again. And if you ignore it again, then we're going to realize that you really don't like this sort of thing, and we're going to try to turn it off for a while.
So I think that's a really interesting point, is that the interactions then are now adaptive, which are based on data. And so there's a learning that's occurring, and I think notification fatigue is a good example of that you're alluding to. That through the data, I am now creating an adaptive and changing experience with the product. And so my withings scale, for example, if I don't weigh in on it as with the frequency that I have reminded my scale to that I should be weighing in, it will send me a notification saying, hey, Jim, haven't seen you for a while, in a conversational tone.
Yeah.
And just gently remind me that I should have weighed in. So that, but if I ignore it for a period of time, it gets a little more insistent.
So it amps it up.
It amps it up.
Changes its tone. It's like, Jim, get over here now.
It says, well, no, it asked me if I needed help.
Okay.
So the idea that, oh, maybe it's no longer paired. Maybe it's not, you've forgotten how to use it. Maybe you didn't change the battery.
Yeah.
And so it asks, it assumes that I want to do the right thing and that there's some impediment that I'm facing, which was a really interesting interaction
pattern. Funny because the thing probably knows that it's connected and it's got a full battery.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. It knows though that. So, yeah. But it's interesting how our relationship with the physical world changes because of data.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a really positive, but wasn't expecting it, experience last night. I just bought a new car, and I was driving out kind of in the boonies to my aunt and uncle's house, and it was dark out, and it's like, it's winter, you know, so I'm like tired, ready for bed at like 5 p.m. basically. And I'm driving, and I was kind of leaned on my right armrest, sort of slouching a little bit. I had my heated seats on, feeling good. And then all of a sudden on my dashboard, it was like, kind of dinged, and I was just sort of alerted by it, and it was like, what did it say? Something like, sounds like you need some rest, in it, or like, wake up, you know, and then it had a little picture of a coffee cup on it, because clearly it was identifying that I was in some sort of a posture that felt like I might be falling asleep, you know, and it did wake me up. I mean, I wasn't sleeping, but it did jar me enough to be like, oh yeah, okay, I need to focus more now. I'm obviously getting a little too comfortable in this position. But I wasn't expecting it, but it was a really positive experience that I wasn't quite prepared for.
And that feedback loop through data.
I had never thought of the notification fatigue, though. That's a really interesting concept of...
Yeah, so if that coffee light stays on, it becomes meaningless, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, how many of us have driven with a check engine light on for weeks?
Yeah. Or even the beeping, you know, when you're about to run into something. It's like if it does it when you're within 20 feet of something, then all of a sudden you don't hear it anymore, right? So how do you continue to make those moments meaningful so that they work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, if it comes with a Starbucks subscription, right?
Like deliver coffee.
Then we've gone full circle with that. But
Yeah. Well, I'd love to kind of shift the conversation a little bit, just because I know Alex and I and Jim were talking in the kitchen a little bit yesterday, and one conversation came up about how some companies, when they're trying to find data or market access, they kind of contest. You used the example in the kitchen of, was it OkCupid, where they were starting out in one way and totally created new market opportunities based on that data. Can you give our listeners a little example of that? I just thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, so dating websites are sort of like back to that customer segmentation, right? It was like, OkCupid had their big data play for a long time. And so it was like their OkCupid blog was where they would publish a lot of their data and data insights. And for a long time, they'd be like super in your face, right? It was like, you know, what are the preferred matches of people in the Midwest and what are they talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people in the Midwest like long walks on the beach, even though there's no beach around, that sort of thing. But the thing that they really explored, which led to changes in the product, sort of like that product feedback loop, was they everybody wants to have sort of a niche that they play into. And so rather than these broad sweeps of large dating apps where you're just in a big pool of people, they would have, you know, a smaller mirrored site, which would be dedicated toward farmers.
Yeah, we were talking about how all of a sudden it's like you want to be dating people like yourself, right? Instead of a huge pool, all of a sudden it's like single farmers become a niche
dating. Or Christian
dating.
Mingle or whatever, right? So
like
they'll segment that large user group into what would be an identified niche.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back to that like whole Colgate thing. How do you identify yourself? What is the thing that you're on the dating site for?
Right.
Or in the case of like Tinder, right? I mean, that's a really easy one people are there for. Or at least when it had kicked
off.
What
are they there for, Alex?
So I have the son of some of our best friends met his wife on Tinder.
Nice.
So, and it was purely as a joke on both of their parts.
Mm. I think that actually worked in reverse, right? So Tinder started as something and it became something else.
Yeah. So data and the ability to collect data, and then we then morph our services and our products based upon the feedback that we get mm-hmm. as people use these things. I believe that what we're now seeing are people developing products specifically to collect the data. What are some guidelines that people should have as they develop products to collect data, do you think?
Thinking through the way we've collected data in the past, IoT is just another facet for that data collection, right? And so like the fundamentals back to the OkCupid blog are still the same, right? It was like, how do we identify either funnels or segmentation groups and build hypotheses and test those hypotheses of your product with the tools at hand? And so in the Web 2.0 days, it was creating events, maybe mm-hmm. creating A/B testing within the actual framework itself so that we could see, put a hypothetical against the actual framework and how does it validate? I think that's one of the things that we're moving into with IoT is, IoT initially was like, can we do it? Almost like the early adopters were the science projects, right?
Right.
Nest creates new user experiences by putting IoT into products. Their consequence ends up being that they have a whole ecosystem that they are able to understand either home security or how you live or what your preferences are. They can adapt their products to better fit where the market is evolving into. And so what started as a thermostat is now a whole ecosystem of home security.
Well, and I think that that's an interesting point because they actually took features out of their product. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, they changed the way that they report energy consumption over time because they found that most of their consumers weren't looking at that particular data point.
It wasn't important to them.
It wasn't important to them. And yet Nest was spending a lot of money for data retention analysis, mm-hmm. and they were also supporting that feature set in their mobile application that they found that people just weren't using. So they were able to eliminate that.
So if you take the same concepts, like, you know, we've had a good foundation in data concepts for web for a long time. If you take those same concepts, they port actually pretty easy over into IoT once connectivity is stabilized and established, right? So the hard part is getting it connected and keeping it secure and maintained. But on top of that, your internal data group has all these questions about who are my users, how are they interacting with it, and allowing them to have access to the product team either during dev or after launch so that we can say, all right, the firmware might not be collecting this now, but is it something we can collect, or can we collect it by way of a combination of firmware and maybe an interaction model with a mobile app? Those hypotheses and sort of like feedback loops into the product development, I think those are where the magic on that data side is.
And I think that's a really interesting point because historically product engineers have not thought about data capture as a fundamental capability that they had to design around. Mm-hmm. And so elevating those questions earlier in the development cycle is probably something that we need to encourage people to do more, is to say, how do I build this product to answer these questions, not just build the product to perform a function. It's not just a feature play anymore. It's now a customer identity and data acquisition play.
Right.
So that's an interesting elevation that I don't always think about as an obvious.
Speaking of elevation, I think it's about time to land this plane. is that a good airplane?
That was a terrible segue.
It didn't land? I don't know. Okay. Well,
yes. What happens to planes when they lose altitude quickly?
Uh-oh. We're going down, folks. No, I just wanted to take a breather. I feel like you guys had so many great examples throughout this conversation, and I certainly learned a lot. I hope our users or listeners did as well. And as we're wrapping up, we're trying to close every one of our podcasts with a question. And that question is, what is your favorite game?
My favorite game is trying to avoid our marketing department when they ask me to do podcasts.
Oh, cruel, cruel, cruel. Alex, do you have a better answer?
I've got three boys, all four and under. And so mine is hide and seek because they're awful at it.
Oh yeah. You don't
have, like I could stand in the middle of the room just standing still and
just put
like,
your hands over your face.
It's like a dinosaur,
face.
Right? Oh, like they can only see movement.
Oh my gosh.
So I do have a hide and seek story. I have a 2-year-old granddaughter and she's just learning how to play hide and seek and she tells me where I need to hide and she'll say, "Grandpa, go hide in the closet." And then she goes and counts in to 10 and then she comes out and she finds me in the closet.
Hey, she's learning.
And if I try to move, she hears me and she'll peek out and say, "Grandpa, don't move."
Aw, so cute. Yeah, we just like to ask that question because obviously you both know this, but not all of our listeners do, but our headquarters, our OST headquarters are actually in an old game factory in Grand Rapids, Michigan called the Drookie Game Factory. So we just think it's a fun way to end each podcast and really appreciate you both being on and taking the time. And hopefully we'll have you back on again to talk more data and things.
We should talk about security sometime.
Yeah, we didn't get into the whole what does it mean to connect IoT devices. So
sounds like a great follow-up podcast. OST, changing how the world connects together. For more information, go to ostusa.com/podcast.